I don't need to say anything after that. I'm good. Let's go to coffee. Wow. We are in the last Sunday of the month. The last Sunday of the theme of the golden thread of truth. Not like we're going to leave truth behind anywhere, but this is the last Sunday of that particular theme, the golden thread of truth. And today's talk is the sun, the moon, and the truth. The sun, the moon, and the truth. And it comes from a quote by the Buddha, who said, three things cannot be long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. And so it's interesting. I recall my childhood, you know, when the big people around me, moms or dads or aunts or uncles or whatever, the big people around would say, are you lying to me? Are you telling the truth? You know, did you have big people like that around you when you were little? Because I know, the truth will always come out, right? I mean, that was the threat. I don't know why. It was a threat that the truth was always going to come out. And it was like, oh my God, we're being threatened by the truth. And you know, and I knew it was an attempt on the part of the big people to keep us honest. You know, that was what they were trying to do. They were trying to tell us it was good to tell the truth and it was bad to tell a lie. And, you know, the backup part of that was, if you tell a lie, you're going to hell. Did anybody have that one too? You're going to hell. If you're lying to me, you're going to hell. So it was like truth and hell. We were threatened with both of them, which was kind of like a weird thing. But, you know, so it had a sort of strange effect on me growing up. You know, the truth became something that was very precious and very hidden. You know, it was like, oh my God, if I'm going to get in trouble anyway. Now, chances are I was telling the truth anyway. You know, are you telling me the truth? You're lying to me. If you're lying to me, I'll find out. And you know, I was telling the truth. Well, most of the time I was telling the truth, right? I mean, most of the time. But the truth, even if I was telling the truth, it seemed like a threat. So the truth became this big, giant, scary thing, kind of. You know, when you're a little kid, it's like, oh my God, you know, the truth is going to come out. It's always going to come out, you know. You would think that'd be a good thing, but it sounded sort of scary. So I remember at some point, you know, maybe unconsciously, though, making the decision that the truth was very, very precious and very, very scary and very, very personal, and I'm going to keep it to myself. So I grew up not letting anybody in. You know, the truth was mine and mine alone. And so I'm not going to share it with anybody. So I kept a lot of things really close to the vest. The truth was my own little version of it. And it was really, very interesting. I had friends, you know, and these friends knew just about as much about me as I would let them. So that these friends knew this about me, and then these friends knew something different about me, and my family didn't know any of my friends, and everything was very compartmentalized, and I controlled every single aspect of it, right? Does any of this sound familiar? The home friends didn't know the work friends, and the work friends didn't know the family, and the family didn't know the friends that I went to concerts with, and everything, and I had a lid on all of it, you know? And I kept it all very, very controlled. And then what happens is you come to a teaching like this and integration begins to happen. We call back those pieces and parts of ourselves that we have distributed so carefully so that this person doesn't know that and that person doesn't know this. And you're fragmented. I'm fragmented. And so for me, coming to a teaching like this was to integrate the self into the self, so that I could call things back like those separate and disowned parts of myself and become an integrated person. I had to call back all those shadow sides too, that shadow nature, who I was in this group and who I was hiding from in that group, and all of those, you know, those unacceptable, even the unacceptable parts of myself that had been fragmented off, that those things that if anybody knew about them, you know, they would run screaming from the room. Oh my God, if they ever knew the truth about me, they would recoil in horror. Does anybody have any of those things, or is it just me? Good Lord, do you have any of those things in your life, the thing that you said or the thing that you did or even the thing you thought about doing, that if anybody ever knew, if it ever got out, people would just run screaming from the room? You're convinced of it. If you were ever found out, you think you would be judged as unacceptable. You know, you would be just judged as unacceptable. That's all there is to it. What is that worst thing that you've ever done that you keep hidden? You know, because here it is, it's living in our heads, and we know. If it ever got out and everybody ever knew, we'd be ostracized. We'd be banished from civilized society. You know, we'd be cast out into the wilderness, into certain death, because that's usually what happens, right? So think about that thing that you're holding in your mind, that thing that nobody knows about you, that thing that you keep hidden, because if people knew, you think that you would be judged as unacceptable. Think of that thing. Think of, what is the worst thing you ever did? Cheat on your taxes? Well, probably everybody could raise their hand on that one at some point in their life. Cheat on your tax? Cheat on your significant other? It happens. Lie? Steal? Did you pretend to be someone you're not? Those things that we have to keep hidden, we're ashamed of them. We're ashamed that we were that person at some point in time, that we did that thing at some point in time, but that's not the truth of who we are, right? It's something we did or said or some action we took. It's not the truth of us. It's a fact of something that happened in our past. You get a car repossessed at some point in your life? Anybody get a car repossessed? Anybody have to file bankruptcy? Good business decision, by the way. Donald Trump did it 5 times, and he's running for president. Okay? So all of these things we're so ashamed of, they're just facts. They're just facts. Call into mind the worst thing you ever did. Think about one of your darknesses. Drug addiction? Alcoholism? What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that darkness that lives in you that you are so ashamed of? You wouldn't let anybody know because you know you would be rejected. Well, you think you know you'd be rejected. When what if everybody knew it? What if everybody in this room knew it? Let's just start here. That worst thing that's in your mind. What if everybody in this room knew that about you? What do you think would happen? What if you had no secrets and everybody here knew that about you? What would happen is you'd be free. It's the only difference. You'd be free. If you released all your secrets, if everybody knew everything about you, the only thing that would be different is you'd be free. And what a wonderful thing that would be. You know, we're on the minister's listserv. I'm on the minister's listserv for our faith tradition. And one of the ministers was talking about how she had a journal, and she kept everything in her journal. Everything, all of her secrets, all of her deep, dark secrets. Everything came out in the journal. And she kept it with her all the time, and she wrote in it all the time. And she was at a diner one morning having breakfast, and she left it by accident. And she was like, ah! She was terrified, and she went back to the diner to get it, and it wasn't there. She went to the little booth she was sitting in, and it wasn't there. Then she went to the management. Nobody had turned it in. It was gone. So she was just fretting over on the minister's listserv. She was just, oh my God, she was beside herself. And, you know, my deepest, darkest secrets and my stuff and my weaknesses and my this and my that and the lights and the darks and everything is in there. And everybody was like, oh my God. And I feel so violated and, oh my God, it's all awful. And one of the ministers said, congratulations, now you're free. Somebody knows your deepest, darkest secrets. No, somebody knows any, you know, and you don't even know who this person is. And somebody knows everything about you. You are free, baby. You are free. Isn't that lovely? And that's really the truth of it. Because here's the deal. When we give up what other people think about us, when we give up thinking about what other people might think of us if they knew, then we're starting to see us as God sees us. We're starting to see us as God sees us. When we see ourselves, when we begin to see ourselves as God sees us, we have to give up blame and shame. We have to give up blame and shame. The only thing that is keeping our secrets is blame and shame. The only thing that keeps us from being truly free is shame and blame. And when we shift from what others think of us and what we think of us to what God thinks of us, there's no place there for shame and blame. We give up that self-imposed shame and blame because Spirit sees us innocent. Spirit sees us in the moment, right here, right now, as perfect, whole, and complete expression of the divine in physical form. So God sees us as perfect, whole, and complete. So we give up shame and blame, and the truth shall set us free, babies. That is the truth of it. So then we have to ask, okay, so what truth? You know, what truth? And what I would say for me, truth is eternal and truth is changeless. It is eternal and it is changeless. The principles of our teaching, that is truth. The spiritual laws that hold our lives together in order, that is truth. The qualities of spirit, right? Abundance and balance and beauty and freedom and joy and love and order and peace and power and unity and wisdom and wholeness, all of those, they are spiritual truth. Truth is not the current set of facts as we know them and understand them. Truth is ageless, you know, timeless, deathless, immortal. Truth is changeless. I have a screen up here. Ah, look at that. Isn't that gorgeous? What a great photo that is. Everybody can see it? I'm not standing in the way. Okay. So the light casts a shadow, which reveals a fact. And the fact is the object is a rectangle. Right? So the light casts a shadow and it reveals a fact that the object is a circle. Okay. So the observed rectangular shape and the observed circular shape are facts. They are absolutely facts. And the people who see only the rectangle know this object to be rectangular. And the people who see only the circle know this object is circular. Both of those things are facts. The truth is the object is a cylinder. The object is a cylinder. There it is, right there. So regardless of the observed facts, truth can be more than both, right? More than an either or thing. More than the observed facts. Truth can be both and. Truth can be some aspect of, or truth can be more than both. And that's the way it is for us daily, isn't it? We are presented with facts all day long. And at the level of the physical world, we have to make a determination based on the facts we see, based on the facts we know. And we come to believe something about the situation or the condition. And what we come to believe may just be a fact. It may not be the truth. It may be just a fact. When we begin to see as spirit sees, we see the cylinder. Not just the shadows cast upon the walls of our perceptions. There are rectangles and circles all around us, aren't there? Republicans and Democrats, rectangles and circles. Conservatives and liberals, rectangles and circles. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Rectangles and circles. We see this all the time because we're seeing from our own perspective. God sees all of it. God sees all of it. When we begin to see as God sees, we see the cylinder. See, your mom was right along. The truth will come out. You know, the truth will come out. So in this case, what is truth? What is truth, you know? What I know truth is that we are some aspect of the life of God. That's what I know is truth. That we are some aspect of the life of God. Therefore, we are heirs to the good of the universe. And Ernest Holmes said it like this. He said, I hasten to explain that I do not think I am God. There's a vast difference between saying I am God and saying God is what I am. Ice is water. All ice is water, but not all water is ice. So we might say this about the life of the human. All of the life of man is some of the life of God. Some of the life of God is all of the life of the human. But the human is not all there is to the life of God. That's truth. It's changeless. It's eternal. We are some aspect of that glorious, divine, grand, awesome life of spirit. We are some part of that life. We are that. And so we start there. We start there. Can we believe that there is some part of us, there is some place in us, like Emerson said, there is that seed of perfection that is nestled within us? Can we believe we are some part of that perfect life of spirit, expressing something in form, expressing life as us? Can we just grasp the truth of that, the truth of that, that we are some part of the life of God, and that we have taken form and we're expressing that life of God in form somehow, some way, uniquely, as only we can? There's 7 billion of us, probably more than that now, on the planet right now. Why do you think spirit would need 7 billion of the same thing? Seems a little redundant, doesn't it? But it isn't, because each and every one of us is a unique, unique individualization of that one life of spirit. You've never, ever, ever been before, nor will you ever be again. You're a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And you're expressing spirit's qualities uniquely as only you can. Nobody else can do it. Nobody else can live life the way you're living life. Nobody else can express the qualities of spirit the way you're expressing the qualities of spirit. Nobody can do it your way. That's why you're here. Spirit had need of you. You're the only one that can do the life of spirit the way you're doing it. You're necessary to the fabric of life. You are necessary to this infinitely beautiful tapestry that we're creating. Your thread, if it were missing, would screw up the whole thing. You know, you are integral to the creative force of the universe. So can we believe that our thoughts about who we are and what we are right here and right now create our perception of our reality? You better believe it. You better believe it. Yeah, because it's truth. Now, I'm not saying your thoughts create your reality. We can get a little weird when it comes to that. New thought can get a little strange about that. You know, well, my thoughts create my reality. I don't think so. I could stand here and think all day long that I'm going to suspend gravity and float up to the ceiling. Not going to happen. Not any time. We don't create our reality. We create our perception of our reality. And when we're in alignment with the laws, with the principles, absolutely, we are in the flow. We are absolutely in the flow. It's like the picture in the back of the room, you know, the three aspects of God. When we have the word and the law in alignment, when we come into alignment, there's nothing that stops it. Nothing stops us from changing the conditions around us. But that is our perception of reality. It's not changing reality. So Ernest Holmes said this. He said, "This whole philosophy, spiritually conceived, is based on the assumption that such a reality exists, that standing within and back of each one of us is God, the eternal presence as us, that there is nothing between us and it but our belief." You got that? There is nothing between us and it but our belief. Therefore, the thesis is that every human is God, though in the germ, right? In the seed, like Emerson had said, in the germ. That within the most humble of us stands the personification of the Almighty. Wow. And that as much of this as we let loose through right knowing constitutes spiritual power. That is what we practice. That's what Ernest Holmes said. And that is what we practice. So we start right here. We start right here, right now, with what we know. You know, I'm teaching practical mysticism. I love the class. And one of the books we're using is Joel Goldsmith. And I love Joel Goldsmith, except he can be really, really dense. You know, have you ever read The Infinite Way? Little book. It's like not even 100 pages. Takes you a year to read, you know? It's like, I just want to hit myself in the head with it. It's a lovely book. I mean, really, honestly, I recommend it. I shouldn't have said that. It's a great book. And it is incredibly deeply mystical, and it takes a long time to really get through it. So I'm teaching mystical, practical mysticism, and the book that's required is a Joel Goldsmith book, but it's called The Foundations of Mysticism. And I thought, oh, great, I'll order it. It'll be wonderful. It'll be fun. It'll be fabulous. It came. It's like this fat. And I thought, oh, God. Oh, God. If I couldn't get through The Infinite Way, there's no way I'm getting through a book that's like three times the size. But it's a wonderful book, and it's all... The book is someone had recorded all of the classes he taught when he was in Hawaii. So it's a very conversational book. He's addressing us as a class. And so the book really is wonderful, easy to read, just fabulous. He just, you know, mind expanding. The point is, he goes right to God. We teach this wonderful five-step prayer, right? Do we know the five-step prayer? Recognition. Come on, say it with me. Recognition, unification, realization, thanksgiving, release. Yay. Okay, we all got it. Joel Goldsmith goes, God, that's all he does, God, you know, and in our class, we're kind of going, wow, you know, big difference. You mean I could just go to, yeah, just go to God. You know, the five steps are great, and Joel Goldsmith goes right to God. No person, no condition, no thing, no circumstance, no event, no nothing, just God. That's it. So we have to start where we are. I start with the five-step prayer treatment because that's what I know, because that's what gets me there. That's the steps that I have to take in approaching the seed of perfection nestled within me. I don't just know that of myself sometimes, and I don't know that of myself when I'm in crisis or conflict or when challenge is up. So I take the five steps to get myself there. To walk into the divine, to walk into the tabernacle of the Most High, to be in the presence of the Almighty. It takes me a couple of steps to get there. You know, Joel Goldsmith says, God, and that's it. And he's there, okay? And so whatever works for you, whatever works for me, that's what we do. That's what we do. Start where we are. Start where we are. We embody the truth as we know it. So what does embody mean? You know, what does embody? What does it mean to embody? We get it. We get it in our gut. We feel truth at some level. We feel it in our gut. We accept it without doubt or without fear. Or we address the doubt and fear and we evaporate it. We dissolve it away to that nothingness that it came from. So then we go back to some part of that affirmative statement that Ernest Holmes said. And within the most humble of us stands the personification of the Almighty. Wow, that's who we are. Within the most humble of us stands the personification of the Almighty. We are some part of the life of God. Acted, would you please? We are some part of the life of God. And when we begin to believe that, when we begin to see as God sees and know as God knows and act as God acts, if God acts through us, we begin to demonstrate the fuller life of God that we are. We begin to expand that. We begin to expand the expression of that in our life. And it's not that we become more of it. We express more of it. We express more of our authentic self. We are that thing. We are that personification of the Almighty. So we start there. We start there. We don't try to bypass. We don't walk around and say, I'm God. You know, you just want to line those people up and smack them. You know? We are some part of the life of God. We are God's own. And that is the truth. That is the truth. And that we can't hide anymore. We have to start living large. We have to start living that as large as we possibly can and then expand on it. That's our charge. That is our charge this week. That is our charge for the weeks to come. That is our charge. To allow that personification of the Almighty to express through you into the world so that when people see you, they see God. Thank you so much.